I'm Sandy Adams, and I've been speaking publicly and researching Agenda 21, 2030 for many years, I mean, about 16 years now. And I was woken up by Rosa Corre, really, and a number of other things, because I happen to work in the corporate world with all the bad people like Bill Gates and Eric Schmidt from Google and Bloomberg and lots of other people, and a mixture of that and reading Behind the Green Mask, because I was originally in the Green Party and the Ecology Party, I realised that it had all been a UN takeover. So yes, I've been doing that ever since, and it's become more and more poignant now, because I think I was a bit ahead of my time, because people thought I was crazy because I was talking about something they'd never heard of and didn't think was really going to happen. And now, just lately with the 15-minute cities and everything, it's really in your face, you know, this sort of soft, smart city agenda.
Can you take us through some of the things that you see unfolding before our eyes that you were warning of, you know, maybe 15 years ago or so?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, I've still got some of my old PowerPoints and I look at them and, you know, cashless society, land grab, everything is happening. Smart cities were the big one. It's about removing people from the countryside and putting them into urban controlled areas with surveillance, you know, the surveillance data harvesting. I was saying this way back in 2013, and a lot of people got it and understood it. Many people didn't, and they thought, yeah, you know, that's nuts, that will never happen. And there was part of me that thought, maybe I'm wrong. I was hoping, I would so love to be wrong. And, you know, as things have unfolded over the years, everything has come true. I'd pray that it didn't, you know, to be honest. It's a horrible thing. And I've spent my life, really, I came out of a well-paid sort of corporate world. I was driven to sort of put this information out, thinking, am I mad? Am I mad thinking this? But I realise now I'm not, sadly. I'm not mad. And in my own town, it's only now that people are actually appreciating the work I've been doing, because it's a green town. So, you know, we've got a green council. And when I was doing the talks way back then, I'd have my posters ripped down and I was called a conspiracy theorist, a right wing, you know, anti-Semite. I was called just about every name under the sun. And I question whether I should live here, actually, but for some reason.
So you're in Glastonbury, aren't you? Now, do you have any truck with this idea that Glastonbury's got some sort of special energy?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I do believe that it's got a special energy. I do. It's on. You know, an energy line. And let's face it, all, you know, this is why the World Economic Forum were on St. Michael's Mount doing a very, very dubious ceremony during the G20 in Carbis Bay, when they were in Carbis Bay. I mean, this, you know, the other side, that, you know, the baddies use these energy lines. They use black magic at the end of the day. And I think there are energy lines, and I think they can be used for good or bad. And Glastonbury sits on a very powerful energy line, the Michael Mary line. And, you know, yes, it's definitely a place where people gravitate to, and pilgrims have come here for years and years and years, as you know. And it was always the high history of Glastonbury is very, it's got a very deep Christian, you know, Celtic Christian and Druidic Christian background, you know, early on. And I think somehow it's also a place where people come to when they're drawn here, because they need help, they need healing. So you do have people come here looking, searching to find what they think is external, but which is in within, you know, as we all know, you know, it's within us. And so you do end up with people with alcohol and drug problems, you know, because of the you know, the festival is always a bit of a crazy time here. The week after the festival, you get a lot of people that just will never go home. You know, they just want to stay here. And sometimes they don't have...
I must admit, I've felt like that sometimes in the old style Glastonbury, where it wasn't quite so fascist, you know, with your kind of almost like a kind of prison ring around it, where people used to kind of hop in over the fence and things like that. In older times, and also when The whole ethos of it was a bit more or less commercial, I suppose. So, you know, in the days when the last thing the BBC would do would put Glastonbury on because it just wasn't establishment enough. It was actually counter-establishment. But anyway, if you're looking at I know you've been looking very closely at these 15-minute cities, and this is something which is hitting right now, isn't it? In London, in other parts of the country, in Oxford, Canterbury, and in fact, this is starting to spread around the country, the idea of... Basically, what it seems to come down to is surveillance cameras and these gigantic planters put in across roads. Now, of course, that means an ambulance can't get down the road, a fire engine can't get down the road. What is the ostensible aim of these 15-minute cities? And you know, why are you against them?
I think I'm against the smart city agenda altogether. And I know that obviously Bristol's is a smart, it's flagship smart city of Europe, isn't it? I feel that the AI that they're putting into these cities is quite pernicious. It's a smog of EMFs. It's a very unhealthy environment for people to live in. But not only that, you know, it's the data surveillance, data harvesting, the fact that your data is not safe. Yeah, they can pick it up off your phone as you're walking past one of these sensors and lampposts and all that stuff that they're putting in. And, the thing is that I don't think humans were meant to live in that sort of environment anyway. Some people love cities and they will always live in cities. But I think you need to have the choice. But Agenda 21 removes that choice of ultimately their aim is for everyone to live in urban environments. And I feel that the 15-minute cities, they're trying to accelerate Agenda 2030 for whatever reason, and whether it's because we're waking up or whether it's because there's earth changes that they know about, who knows? But there has been a directive to accelerate it. And we've talked about accelerationism in the past. And it's a massive acceleration of Agenda 2030. So what they've done is they've created this 15-minute city thing, which, to be honest, has been around since the early 2000s. You know, with Ken Livingstone and he started it, and the C40, you know, mayors and the C40 cities. but it's become, obviously they've made it a reality, but it's just been forced on everyone, and it's a form of locking us down in our own environment, in our own, you know, cities or towns. And the LTNs, the low traffic neighbourhoods, are a form of restricting movement, you know, that they're not quite so, you know, if you were going to do an LTN, it would be in somewhere like Glastonbury, because you can actually reach everything within 15 minutes. But an LTN, it could mean that they pedestrianise the high street and they make it difficult and everybody's going around the ring road and... you know, all that kind of thing. And it's really funny because some massive planters were delivered last year to the town, and they were huge. They look like sort of water tanks. They're riveted down the side and they've got a little logo of the Tour in metal on them. But they were huge, and they put saplings in them and they distributed them all the way down the high street, and the pavements weren't wide enough to take them. And all the residents complained. They said, you can't get wheelchairs down there. You can't. When the tourists come, there's not enough room on the pavements and all this sort of thing. So they took them down and they put them in one of the car parks. I think there's only one at the top of the high street now, but they were huge, you know, 4 foot square, massive galvanized metal planters. And I knew exactly what they were for. And actually a few people in the town did and challenged the mayor on it. And in fact, it was in the talk I did at the town hall the other day, that the crowd challenged him and said, look, what's going on with these planters? You say there's no restrictions happening in Glastonbury, but, you know, those planters were used in Thetford and other areas to block roads. And they're made so you can slip a forklift truck underneath them and move them around, you know. They're just waiting to really be roadblocks. And, you know, the mayor fluffed around and said, oh, I didn't know how big they'd be. I thought, well, you must have seen a drawing, mate. You paid for them. But, he just denied all knowledge of it. But, it's a soft, smart city agenda. And it's going to not a very good place, because it, you know, that with all that, with the 15-minute cities comes a lot more AI surveillance cameras. You know, you've got them tracking your movements, you know, your car, your number plate recognition, huge fines if you disobey. The whole thing is about control, and we know it's not about CO2, don't we? The thing is that they're making it all about CO2. And, you know, this is the problem, is that, again, at the Earth Summit, they created this lie, and they're perpetuating it, and they won't stop. They won't stop until they've got everything under control.
Well, I mean, I'm reminded a little bit of China, because if you're a Chinese person, you are told by the government where you are allowed to live.
Yeah.
If you want to, say, for example, you meet someone, you fall in love with someone on the other side of China, which isn't very easy, but maybe you do, maybe you're traveling for work or something, you then have to apply for permission to live in a certain part of the country. And, you know, this whole idea of kind of corralling people, restricting movement, almost seems to be taken straight from the Chinese Communist Party.
Well, it is without a doubt. This, I mean, it's a communist, if you like, it's a global communism, and we call it communitarianism. And I don't know whether I've spoken to you about that before, but Maurice Strong, who set up the Earth Summit to actually bring in Agenda 21 in 1992, he was a great fan of China. Massive fan. He was friends with Chairman Mao. His cousin lived with Chairman Mao, was his lover. And when he got done for the oil for food scandal, he went and lived out there, because he was going to be put in jail in the United States for getting involved in the oil for food scandal with Adnan Khashoggi. So he lived out there, and he ended his days there. And he absolutely loved the Chinese system. And he was, you know, he was a communist. He was a self-confessed communist. So this whole agenda is really about global control under that kind of system. And they've done it all in the name of saving the planet. It's so clever.
It is quite clever. And also, I mean, we've now got, I mean, a lot of people, Sandy, have poked fun at people like you and I for many years as conspiracy theorists. Me, basically, mostly to do with my work on the Bilderbergers, but you on Agenda 21 and Agenda 2030 and all these sustainable development goals that sound so nice. Now we've got this thing called the cost of living crisis, which it seems quite clear has been deliberately orchestrated, hikes in the price of fuel. And actually now that's had enormous knock-on effects, with the current food price inflation running around about 17%. So, of course, wages are not keeping up with that, anywhere near with that generally. And so we've got this thing that they quite cutely call the cost of living crisis, which really means that people just cannot afford to live. And I think there are more people maybe out there now that are realizing, actually, this economic thing has come to my door, and I now can't afford maybe to run a car. I can't afford, the cost of living is just becoming impossible. I can't afford to pay the mortgage, all this kind of stuff. And now I think, you know, once things like that happen, people do start to get a bit more, maybe a bit more suspicious minded, Sandy.
I think so. And I've seen a massive turnaround in this town. I mean, I could not imagine, you know, booking a 3-minute slot. And that's all I did on the 14th of March. I booked a 3-minute slot with our town council, who I've had run-ins for the last 10 or 12 years, if not more, about their policies, their green policies. And the fact that they've declared a climate emergency and that they've got net zero policies now. I thought, do you know what? I'll just, somebody else couldn't do this 3-minute slot about 15-minute cities. And I was aware that, you know, Mendip had no plans for 15-minute cities. I mean, apart from these planters that turned up in the town. But, you know, it's a small town anyway. It's not going to happen. But they could bring in, you know, low traffic neighborhoods things in. But so I went, and I had no idea that 200 people turned up to a normal council meeting. I didn't know that. I was just going to toddle along. I thought it'd be a normal council meeting. I didn't know I was being filmed. And I was amazed at the support for me when I got there. I'd lived in a town where I thought everyone hated me. for a long time. I mean, there's a few people, there's a core few people that I know were rebels and were behind me. But it was like suddenly there was 200 people trying to get into the council chamber who wanted to actually support the work that I've been doing for 16 years.
Well, you know what? I'm reminded of very much of Bath, where the Together Declaration people in January came along to do a little seminar in Bath, and it was standing room only. It was an enormous hotel reception area that they took. Well, it wasn't a reception area. It was a conference area that they took over, and there were must have been nearly 1,000 people turned up for this meeting in Bath. About exactly what we're talking about, the whole idea of 15-minute cities. And it doesn't seem that the press or the politicians are really understand the resistance that there is out there. And also, of course, it's flagging this thing up, Sandy, which I don't think in my lifetime hasn't really been so clear, that our local authorities are becoming instruments of another force, that they're not actually doing what the local people want at all.
Exactly. And this is really become so crystal clear, and particularly in the last few days, because after that meeting, I mean, I literally turned up. I thought I'll do the 3-minute slot, because a friend of mine said, I can't do this slot on 15-minute cities. Can you do it for me? And I said, sure, I will. I said, but, you know, I can't bear Glastonbury Town Council because I've, you know, I've run ins with them for so many years. And she said, no, it's time you did. So I thought, OK, well, she couldn't do it. But actually someone else, another friend of mine who did the most amazing, she went on before me with her 3-minute slot, and she gave an amazing, a really good talk on 15-minute cities and how, you know, how they will destroy, and what's happened in Oxford, Cambridge, Canterbury, all those towns where it's been a monumental failure, and people have died in ambulances and people, you know, it destroyed businesses. You know, it's no wonder everybody hates it. You know, of course they do. It's designed to destroy our infrastructure. That's what it's designed to do. It's not designed to save CO2 emissions, and we know that, but a lot of people don't know that. So anyway, so I when she'd done her slot, I thought, what do I say? And I thought, do you know what, I'm just going to let rip. I'm just going to ad lib and just say whatever I feel. And it turned into this sort of 15-minute diatribe, and they didn't stop me. And the mayor, who I'd had a run-in with, you know, 10 years ago, around my kitchen table, when I wanted to talk about, to explain Agenda 21 policies that through ICLEI were now in our town council, he told me I was a conspiracy theorist. And he also said he was a communist, but I shouldn't say that, but I've said it now anyway. I didn't say that at the meeting, but... So I just said, well, I'm wasting my time. You better go. So he went. And anyway, long story short, he was the mayor again. And he was sitting with his jaw on the floor, basically thinking, oh, my God, she's going for it. But nobody stopped me. He didn't stop me. A lot of the councillors were saying, you know, cut it off, you know, stop her. And he let me carry on. Give him his due. Bless him. He let me carry on. And I thought, well, you know, maybe he realises that there's loads of people in this chamber who want to hear what I've got to say, and they agree with me, and that he could see the change in the tide. But what they couldn't understand, you know, there were a few of them that said, oh, I only found out what a 15-minute city was the other day, you know, 2 days ago. And I thought, why don't these people know? Do they live in some kind of bubble? Because these people are supposed to be, you know, acting for us. You know, these people are supposed to be doing our, you know, they're supposed to work for us. We pay their wages. Why don't they know about what's going on? And it was really interesting to see that I'd given them some paperwork to look at as well, which I'll tell you where that's available now. But anyway, it all became a bit strange, and I finished. And when I finished, I thought, well, that's it. I had no idea it was being recorded. And it was only the next morning when a friend of mine called me and said, do you realise your talk in Glastonbury Town Hall is trending at 4,000 tweets a minute an hour on Twitter? I wasn't even on Twitter at that point. I thought, blimey, OK. So I joined Twitter, and sure enough, it was trending and it was going mad. And then I found out that it had gone all around the world, and it's still going all around the world. So at the meeting, the mayor promised me that we'd have a meeting about this. I said, we need to follow this up. We need to discuss net zero. We need to discuss the validity of net zero, because you implemented all these policies without any recourse to us, we the people. And I don't know when they did it. I think it was, I can't remember, but it wasn't during lockdown. But they declared a climate emergency themselves, you know. And it was, that's happened in most town councils. And, you know, the people now are questioning this, you know, because they've woken up. And the councils can't understand it. They're playing catch up. And I saw my mayor in the pub the other night, and I've sent him about 6 emails asking him, please, can you let me know when we can have this meeting to discuss your policies? And we will bring paperwork and we'll have a proper debate about net zero, because this has to be, we have to talk about this, because these 15-minute cities are destroying us. They're destroying all the people living in those cities. It's been a shambles, the whole thing. And he then said to me, he said, well, they haven't rolled out the 15-minute cities yet. And I said, are you crazy? I said, they're trialing it in Oxford and Canterbury and Cambridge. And I said, have you not heard about this? He hadn't a clue. He had not a clue that it was being trialled. I said, people have died in ambulances, stuck in traffic. It's costing people a fortune in their journeys. It's divided people up because it's taking them hours to get to work. They're losing money. And all the businesses, for instance, on the Cowley Road, all those businesses all over Oxford and all these other cities like Canterbury. And Canterbury's even worse because they don't even give them an allowance. It's just you're not allowed to go into the town. They've just carved it up like a pie chart. And he was so naive about everything. And then all he could say to me was, Sandy, you've divided this town. I was doing so well until that night. I've received hate mail.
Hang on, this is a bit cheeky, because what's happened is, you know, it sounds a little bit like the sort of words they were using around Brexit, is that there is this division there anyway, that people like him haven't actually recognised that division, and they're trying to pretend it's not there, and they want it to go away.
Yeah.
What do you think we can do about all this? Because, you know, obviously, there, as you say, many of our politicians actually are rather like during the COVID pandemic. What they're doing is they just don't want to know. Andrew Bridgen quite rightly described it as willful blindness, you know, because they'd much rather just take their salary, have a nice, easy time in their job. Mm-hmm. And the last thing they want to do is to have to grapple with something which is so problematic. So what can we do to actually to make sure that these sustainable development goals are exposed and that some of the measures are stopped, because this is going to be severely limiting our freedoms.
Absolutely. Now, it is interesting, because we have to do it, if you like, at a local level. I truly believe this. It has to be, everything has to be from a local level. What happened, I mean, because this crazy thing happened where this talk went all around the world, and I had no idea until the next morning, and people have said, you know, what documents did you give them? And I told them, and then this amazing grassroots organization asked me, they've been working on trying to challenge their councils, and I think what I did kind of galvanized a lot of people into thinking, well, actually we could address, and this happened in Colchester. Some amazing people in Colchester suddenly decided to address their councils on electric cars, and they had fantastic information about how they don't work and how dangerous they are and how how unsustainable they are, apart all the mining that goes on in the Gambia or wherever they do it. It's not the Gambia, it's the other part, Congo, and how children are mining all these horrible lithium cobalt. Anyway, it was really interesting, because this grassroots organization, and they're called ukcitizen.org. Do look at their website, because I've collaborated with them. In fact, I should be on a Zoom thing with them tonight, but it's easier to talk to you, because I think it all goes out a bit further. But and I did go on to, I did a talk. Now, who was it with? I can't remember. I did a talk with Richard Vobes and mentioned them, because what they're doing is they're putting together PACs. And they've got a lawyer, who Jane, and she lives in California, but she's actually from Yorkshire. and she's working, she's straddling the pond, basically. She's helping people do this kind of thing in California, but she's also wants to be involved in a grassroots movement here to actually challenge net zero. And this was my dream. This was what my whole tirade was about. It's challenging net zero. And so they're putting together packs of information for people of how we've been duped, the legalities or illegalities behind them, and how to approach your council to actually challenge the net zero, and how the people don't want it. And if the people don't want it, we pay their wages. It has to go. And these,
well, I mean, that's if we live in a democracy. And I think, you know, this is this is a fact that the authorities, including central government in Britain, that have signed up to these sustainable development goals and these various objectives, haven't really thought through the implications of how it's going to affect people. And one of the crazy things that seems to be going on, Sandy, is not only is our government and particularly because they're quite impoverished after the bailouts in 2008, etc., they seem to be taking on their own citizenry, saying, well, no, you're going to have to be impoverished. You're going to have to pay double what you used to have to pay for to heat your homes. Oh, and by the way, you're not allowed to use wood-burning stoves, and various rules like this that seem to be coming down the pipeline. And yet, at the same time, they're also pushing to have a war, a possibly nuclear war, with Russia. So they seem to have taken on their own population as well as a major superpower at the same time.
Interesting. Yeah, I take on board all that. But, you know, this is the final battle, and you know that, and I know that. It's almost as though if we don't pull this back, it's the end. It's the end, isn't it? It's the end of human civilization. It's the end of human beings as we know it.
I know you've been talking about this idea of zero trust. Now, what do you mean by that?
Well, this is something that I've got a friend called Aman Jabi. I don't know if you've come across him. I'd advise anyone who's listening to look up Aman. It's Aman Jabi, Jabbi. Now, Aman lives in Montana in the United States, and he worked in Silicon Valley for 24 years developing AI technology. You know, he developed surveillance cameras, smartphone cameras. If you've got a smartphone, he developed that technology. And he was in facial recognition. He designed facial recognition, and he was very young. He went straight out of university to university in the United States. He's from India. But he got a conscience when he was doing this, and he suddenly realized it, where it was going, in the way that a lot of us do. I mean, I was working, you know, I did installations for Bill Gates, and I suddenly thought, oh my God, you know, I don't want to be working with these people. And he did the same thing, and he decided to come out of it and campaign and try and tell people where this is all going. You know, the biometrics in supermarkets, you know, that where the doors of the supermarkets, they all have glass doors with the products. And actually Lidl have already started doing that, glass doors with the products behind. And if your facial recognition, if you've done something that they're not pleased with, maybe you've had too much of a certain product and it's restricted, or you've been a naughty person like you and I, and we've spoken about things we shouldn't have done, you will not be able to access the food in these supermarkets. And now the human tills are going, and you've got these biometric sort of self-service tills, and they've all got facial recognition cameras. So as you're doing your transaction, they will be taking all the details from your credit card, you know, but it will get worse. You won't be able to access those tills unless you've got your digital ID. And this is where it's all going. CBDCs, digital IDs, you know, they want to know every single detail about your habits, your shopping habits, your lifestyle habits, everything, so that all the information is in one place, and they can take, and everything is a privilege. And zero trust means that they'll do away with VPN. And that will be a thing of the past. What they will do is that you're considered guilty before, it's not the other way around. VPN, there's trust there. You say who you are, you've got your password, blah, blah, blah. With zero trust, you have to authenticate before you use anything, before you open your computer, send an email, buy anything, do anything, whatever. And all that data is in one place for everybody to see and be shared with third parties, people like, other corporations and all sorts of people.
Well, what it seems to me is that over the last, gosh, what is it now, 30 years or so of the internet, we've become more and more dependent on it. I think I'm not the only one that's felt pushed more and more to use internet. The idea that it almost everything now comes with, oh, look at this website, read it on the internet. Even if you're phoning up to get some information, they normally just say, oh, well, you need to download it from the internet here somewhere. And so as we become so dependent on the internet, so we can be maneuvered into the position where, well, those services on the internet can force us to come up with a digital ID or whatever. So they've got us in the position where we're so dependent on it that it can now turn on us. It's like we used to access the internet, but actually the internet is now getting to the point where it is accessing us, and it might just change its mind with a little AI to allow us to get what we want, so the onus is now on us. It's changed from the onus being on us on them really to say why you shouldn't have something. Now it's the onus is on us, it's on us to prove that we need something before we're allowed to access it. That seems to be where that's going. But anyway, you've also got some sort of activity going on down in Glastonbury over Easter, which just sounds a bit bizarre. I mean, we do get the sort of crystal gazers and the crystal shops and people like that in Glastonbury, and that's been going on for many years. So can you tell us what's going on over the Easter weekend, a Friday, Saturday, Sunday? That's the 7th, 8th and 9th of April.
Well, I'm aware that I'm not overly, I was brought up in a Christian faith, but I'm not sort of like a massive Bible basher or anything. But what I have noticed recently is because of what's going on in the world, that there is a degree of absolute evil going on in our world, and it does disturb me. I mean, literally the worst. We're undergoing the worst battle between the dark and the light, I think, ever. Maybe, I don't know, maybe it's happened before, but certainly in the recent history.
We've certainly had Nazi rallies have returned over in Ukraine, which is something which seems to be being deliberately suppressed by the media, which is rather worrying. Certainly my grandparents' generation, they thought that they dealt with that one and it was never going to come back again. Well, it certainly is resurgent in Ukraine.
Well, that's the saddest thing, is that my father, he was a squadron leader during the war, and he won the DFC, and he died thinking we'd won the war. And I look at it now and I thought, Dad, bless you. It carried on. It's been carrying on ever since. We had Operation Paperclip and all that nonsense. And it's never gone away. The evil has never gone away.
It seems to have transferred itself into a kind of banking Reich, if you want, a kind of Fourth Reich, where they use banks instead of tanks to take over. So the idea is you don't need to steamroll an armored division into a town. You can bit by bit, you can now just buy up any opposition. I mean, this has been happening in markets right across the Western world particularly, and there is an argument to say that this is one of the things that the Chinese and our various enemies, the Iranians, the Russians, are not prepared to put up with, is banks buying everything up, as they've been doing with political parties pretty much in the West here, and certainly with the press. Getting back to Glastonbury at the weekend, what's happening?
So we're in a big battle between the dark and the light. So Glastonbury's always been a bit of a nonsense place, because it's got a very high history of, the very first Christian church was built here in something like, I don't know, AD 60 something. And it's got a very, you know, deep history of being a very stable religious place. People have come here, and there's been pagan, obviously it was pagan before that, and people have sort of always danced around maypoles, and it's all been fun, you know. You kind of embrace all the, you know, okay, paganism is fine, it was there before Christianity, why not? You know, all of that sort of thing. But lately it's become incredibly dark. And I've seen it because I've lived here for over 16 years now. And I thought, do you know, I went to the last May Day celebration, which was always a bit of fun. It was maidens dancing around a maypole, and it was all a bit, you know, everybody drinking mead. And I used to go to it every now and then. But last year it was dark. You know, there were people wearing horns and dressed up as goats, and women with no clothes on and just horns. And it just suddenly took on this rather dark, you know, this rather dark aspect to it. And I thought, you know, it's not like it used to be. And I, obviously, the more I've read in the last 3 years about the satanic stuff that we're encountering, it's deeply uncomfortable. I find it deeply uncomfortable what's going on, because I'm more aware. And I think an awful lot of people have really realize that there is there is the deepest evil going on in the world, and when you look at what, you know, what's going on with a lot of the globalists and Hollywood and everything else, you begin to question everything. And I certainly have. And what I thought was just like crystals and, you know, new age stuff has suddenly gone a bit darker. And sure enough, there's a group that started set up here. And they follow the work of Aleister Crowley, and it's called Avalon Thelema, and they're doing a ritual. They call it a ceremony at the Market Cross on the 8th, 9th, and 10th of this month. Obviously, it's Easter weekend. And why it's got to be 3 days, I don't know. But they're reciting it's the Book of Law, which is actually one of Aleister Crowley's deepest, you know, sort of works on Thelema. In the Oracle, it says here, it says, join Avalon Thelema at 12 noon at Glastonbury Market Cross on the 8th, 9th and 10th of April to celebrate a feast for the 3 days of the writing of the Book of Law. Yeah.
And okay, brilliant.
We've also got something else happening, which I didn't like at all, because it's called the Feast of Cattle. And they're holding another event in, it's the Temple of Avalon on the Saturday, the 29th of April at 6 p.m. It's a Thelemic Beltane ceremony. All are welcome. Donations would be great. It's a celebration of Sol in the succedent decan of Taurus, hosted by Avalon Thelema. Apparently it's celebrating, I think it's the goddess Nut and two other gods or goddesses. No, it's very Babylonian. It's kind of anyway. Well,
look, this is an underground religion which is just poking its nose out now. You know, it's been kind of doing that for a while, but it's obviously chosen Glastonbury seems to be the place it wants to do it.
This is deeply dark, and of course the mayor's got involved in it, and everybody's all the. You know, I did laugh about it, thinking, someone said to me, it sounds like Hot Fuzz. I don't know if you ever saw that film where this young policeman turns up in this backward sort of Somerset village, and he finds out that they're all Satanists, you know, dancing naked round pentacles. Anyway, I just suddenly thought this isn't really something, and they're doing it right on that powerful ley line, you know, right on the Michael Mary line. So what is really going on? And these people have just turned up in town, and they seem to be making lots of contacts with quite influential people, like all the politicians and members of the Green Party and people that are sort of, you know, real kind of, you know, people that organize events and that are sort of all in this kind of new age, let's make Glastonbury a tourist attraction type thing. And, you know, these people are, you know, what are they doing? And
well, for a start, I wonder where, you know, just how child friendly this kind of thing is to be doing in the city centre or town centre there. And also, I'm reminded of what's been going on over in Little Rock, Arkansas, in the United States, where there's been a thing about religious toleration. Of course, well, generally speaking, people are fine about religious toleration, but we're now being told that this must include Satanists. And of course, you know, if you look into the satanic beliefs, although they would probably deny this, they are just simply opposed to Christianity. That's their, but you know, they have the Christian cross, they turn it upside down, and much of their ritual is around just being, I mean, for example, saying Christian prayers backwards, this kind of thing. The idea is that this is just opposition to something. So it seems to be maybe what you're talking about, it being dark, is it's just because it's about hating something, or it's about being in opposition to something, rather than actually having a religion of its own. And of course, at the end of the day, if you look really deeply into it, a lot of this is about individuals whose egos tell them that they can become gods, and that they are don't need to have any kind of morals, that they can do pretty much whatever they want. But Crowley most definitely was a Satanist. I mean, he was a self-confessed Satanist, so it's interesting that they're reciting his words. How do you think this is going to go down in Glastonbury?
Well, I'm absolutely stunned that an awful lot of people are going along with it and thinking it's all cool. Whether they really haven't looked at the work of Aleister Crowley, I don't know. But all I know is they are expecting quite a big crowd around the Market Cross. And there's people that I know were sort of into paganism, you know, and they think it's paganism. They can't see the difference. I mean, yes, a pantheistic sort of, they might think of a Christianity at the moment is not sexy enough, you know, that's the trouble. And people want something that's different and liberal and whatever. But, you know, when it's peddling, you know, stuff that you wouldn't want your children to see, then it's not good, is it?
It's actually quite frightening for the kids, isn't it, as well? You know, the idea of adults dressing up as animals with horns and sort of dancing around. I mean, this is really the idea that actually there is no difference between humans and animals, and we are animals. That's partly why they're doing this sort of thing. But anyway, look, Sandy, thanks for flagging that up. That'll be interesting to see, you know, how that all goes down over Easter, particularly an important time of year. You know, for most faiths there is something there. There's certainly the Jewish Passover, you know, the pantheists, they also will be celebrating the sort of fertility rites of spring as well. But be interesting to see how the Crowleyites, you know, how that goes down in Glastonbury. Good God. But anyway, how can people actually follow your works? And it'd be also, if you can just remind us about this UK citizens site, so people can follow that stuff up. Yes, about the 15-minute sittings, etc.
I got banned from Facebook actually a couple of days after I did the town hall talk. But I'm on Twitter. I am at SandyAdams2030. You can get hold of me on there. I haven't yet... I've got a website, which is sandyadams.net. I haven't linked it up to my YouTube.
And that's with an I, S-A-N-D-I, adams.net, yeah.
Adams.net is my website. But you can find a lot of my work on Rumble, YouTube. Still, I think I did get a lot of stuff banned off YouTube. But YouTube, Rumble, BitChute and Odyssey. I've done loads of talks recently. Richard Vobes is always, all the talks with Richard are on Rumble. And I did James Dellingpole recently. If you look at the Dellingpod, I was on his and Richie Allen. So I'm trying to get the word out. And this the organisation that I've worked with really since I did the town hall talk is ukcitizen.org. And they are putting up on their website all the documentation that we put together, myself, the legal lady, and a lady called Sue. There's Sue, Jane and Robin, and really, really fantastic people who've all got proper jobs. But they're people that have, and since I did the talk on Richard Vobes, they've had people joining and wanting to subscribe to their website to get these packs, because they everybody is saying, we don't want these 15-minute cities, and if we can challenge net zero, we will make a big deal about it and hold a meeting to talk about it with our councils. And I really hope, I know you're right, we live in a very undemocratic world. Most of these councils, they don't give a damn about what we think. But if it's a numbers game, and I think it is, in numbers we can do it. And if we've got everybody in the whole country, and they're making enough packs, I think it's 360-something packs, which is every town council in the UK, then I think it can affect some sort of reaction. Yeah.
Well, you're right. The only thing that's necessary for evil to triumph is that good men do nothing. And that's one of the old Bristol MPs. And in fact, he's still got his statue. That's not the one that people tore down and threw into the harbour in Bristol. So, Sandy Adams, thanks very much for joining us again.
Thank you very much, Tony. It's been a pleasure.